This is Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen along with you. Concussions and the potential for subsequent brain injury is on the mind of many parents today, especially with the start of school year and fall sports. There's been much attention to the hundreds of thousands of sports-related concussions in this country, ranging from the high-profile NFL players with traumatic brain injury to fears of what these repeated head injuries might be doing to our children while they engage in sports like football and soccer. And here with more on this is Dr. Brian Rieger. He's the director of the Upstate Concussion Center. Welcome, Brian. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Linda. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's always wonderful to see you. So this continues to be of great concern, so much so that all 50 states now have sports concussion laws, including New York. Explain that to us. Tell us about that.
Well, certainly over the last several years, there's been a lot of attention paid to sports concussion, and I think there's been a recognition that with the prevalence of this condition, there needed to be more work done to make sure that we protected our kids. And the real focus has been on educating people about what the right way to manage a concussion is. Because if we do that properly, if we recognize a concussion, if we treat the person properly, in almost all cases, we can prevent some of the long-term problems that you may be hearing about.
Isn't it really important because it's the proper management of concussion, as you said, could really reduce the duration and the severity of the symptoms going forward?
I think that's the belief of many people who work in this field of concussion and have seen the cases where an athlete was either hiding symptoms or was not managed properly, and it seems that there's an increased risk in those cases of more prolonged and severe symptoms affecting their schoolwork or their ability to participate in sports, et cetera.
So just help us understand very briefly what the guidelines are, particularly in New York State.
Right, and they're pretty simple and pretty consistent across the states, which is that in the event of a suspected concussion, it's imperative that an athlete immediately be removed from the practice or game, and in fact be removed from any activity where there could be an increased risk of head injury. And it's a pretty simple idea. When the brain is hurt, it's more vulnerable to being hurt again. So we want to wait until it's recovered before we allow that person to go back to risky activities.
So is there a prescribed time frame in terms of how long someone has to be taken out of these activities? And are there other activities, ancillary activities, such as schoolwork or things that require mentation or heavy thinking that would also be prohibited or limited?
Yes. The first step is if someone on the sidelines, and there's not always a medical person on the sidelines, but let's say a coach or someone is suspicious, they pull that person out. The first step is get that medical evaluation. And maybe there's not a diagnosis of concussion and it's safe for the person to go back. But if there is a diagnosis of concussion, then that kicks in a pretty standard protocol where we're going to keep an eye on that athlete. We usually expect that the symptoms can worsen in the first few days, so we really want to pay attention. There's a growing sense that maybe we should keep these kids out of school for a day or two automatically just to really let them rest. We don't want to have them be out of school too long, certainly no longer than necessary, but perhaps resting that brain aggressively early on helps. Then we're going to wait till the symptoms have resolved or gone away while they're resting, and then we gradually introduce them back to physical and mental activity. If the symptoms don't come back during that period, that's when it's safe for them to go back.
Why is it so hard for it to be diagnosed? I remember you told in an earlier interview I had with you that concussions so often can be missed because it's hard to diagnose. Help us understand that.
This is a huge frustration to those of us working in the area of concussion. We have no medical test that diagnoses a concussion. It still relies on signs and symptoms. So we see a person gets hit, we see a person's in a car accident or whatever happens, and we really are just taking a good history, listening to what they describe about how they feel, and then making a determination that the person has had a concussion or not. But
so,
the symptoms are not specific to a concussion, so that can be a difficult call to make sometimes.
So that things like CT scans, which we often rely on for so many other types of things, really doesn't show a concussion.
That's an excellent point. The reason that CT scans are done is to determine whether the injury is more severe than a concussion, whether there's bleeding or swelling or a skull fracture that would warrant neurosurgical intervention. But in the vast majority of cases, a CT scan is normal. And as a matter of fact, there's a growing effort to try to reduce the use of CT scan, especially in children, because of the amount of radiation that's involved in those scans. So if you're a parent out there and your kid has a concussion and they go to the emergency room, oftentimes you want that CT scan done to reassure you, but the doctors may be telling you that we don't think it's needed, and actually it's probably better for your child if we don't do it. So be prepared that you may hear that now.
I could see why parents would be alarmed at that. Yes. On both sides of the discussion.
Yes.
There are also some myths around concussion, the idea that you need to have blacked out in order for you to have sustained a concussion, or that everyone gets better within a two-week period, or once the headache leaves, all is well. So it seems like people need to, especially the people around kids in sports, need to understand very clearly what these symptoms are and what they mean.
Yes, and that's a good point. So only 10% of athletes actually lose consciousness. So yes, definitely most do not. And there have been some studies. I just did a talk for some soccer parents, and one of the studies I found preparing for that showed that soccer athletes, high school soccer players who had some education about concussion were twice as likely to report their symptoms to their coach as those who didn't have education. So there's a lot we don't understand and don't know about concussion, but we do know that if we give people the right education, we have a better chance of recognizing those injuries and of working together to manage them properly.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Dr. Brian Rieger, and we're talking about concussion and what's being done to diminish the hazardous effects of it. I mean, one of the things you told me many times we've talked is the fact that many kids don't recognize that they've had a concussion, even kids and even coaches, and that leads to the problem. And it's not limited just to the classic high school football players, that it's permeating all through sports today. Tell us about that.
Yes, you know, the symptoms of a concussion can be quite varied. Everything from headache, which is the most common symptom, to vision problems. My daughter plays soccer, and a player on her team was telling her that she saw circles in her eyes after she got hit on the head. That was one of the symptoms that she had. And that's not necessarily something that a high school person might know could possibly be a symptom of concussion. So again, I think while it can be difficult sometimes to sort it out, there is a pretty typical set of symptoms that everybody should have some awareness about.
But more and more kids are being exposed as we play. You know, you have youth soccer now. I mean, it's not limited to just that high school football player on the defensive line back. I mean, you know, we need to look across the board. Wasn't there some interesting statistics recently that suggested that now more soccer is contributing as much?
Well, high school football and girls soccer together contribute to more concussions at the high school age than other sports. So most of the concussions come from those sports.
And that's the most recent data we have.
Yes, yes, and that's probably because of the popularity of those sports amongst boys and girls, but also the risk. But again, my daughter plays soccer. I was just at a game last night, so I'm not, suggesting that we need to not play sports. Quite the contrary. I think sports have a lot of value, but especially in youth sports. So we have these laws, but these laws apply primarily to scholastic sports. In youth sports, there are still very little guidelines, very little mandated education.
So when you say youth sports, you're talking about sports that take place outside
correct.
Of the aegis of a school.
Correct.
And they could be something like Little League, for
correct.
Example?
Correct, Little League or Pop Warner football, or in this area, certainly youth lacrosse leagues,
youth
soccer leagues. Exactly.
So parents really need to be aware of this and, you know, basically prepare their coaches, insist that their coaches really, or someone, a trainer or someone, really is apprised of the significance of potential concussion.
Yes, I mean, at youth sports, there's rarely a medical professional like a trainer.
So what about what exactly happens to the brain once there's been a concussion? What I mean is, I'm not asking you for, you know, data in terms of what's actually physiologically happening, but in terms of what are the effects on a brain that where maybe it's not being recognized? What are the short-term effects,
mm-hmm.
and then what are the longer-term effects?
So a concussion's a brain injury caused by a blow or a jolt to the head, and there's multiple ways that the brain is affected. The neurochemistry of the brain is affected, the blood supply to the brain can be affected, and the microstructural architecture of the brain, the actual fibers of the brain, can be affected. And in most cases, this is a transient effect that resolves within about a week or two in the vast majority of cases. But we have so much more sensitive ways of looking at the brain now that we're really beginning to understand how complicated these injuries can be, and also how it's possible that the brain can be affected even when the hit to the head doesn't actually produce a concussion.
We
call these subconcussive events. And there's a lot of interest now, not only in concussion, but what might be the effects of accumulated trauma to the brain. So let's say you play a season of football and you take multiple hits to the head, but you don't actually suffer a concussion. Is there some risk associated with that? There have been studies with professional football players in particular that have raised concerns about the effects of repeated head trauma.
You know, leading to things long-term like dementia, ALS, Parkinson's, that kind of thing.
Yes, all of those have been suggested. It's certainly too early to know exactly what those relationships are, but I certainly think that we have enough information to know that we need to do more research into this area, and a lot is beginning to happen there.
How about kids in school who've had, let's say, played a season of football or play a season of soccer and may or may not sustain some, like you said, have more of these subconcussive events? Are we likely to see issues with learning problems, impulse control, that kind of thing? What's been your experience?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think in the cases where we don't actually meet the threshold for a concussion, I think in a younger child, we're still a ways from being able to say that that's going to produce these problems. Parents may certainly worry about that. They may attribute changes in their child to some of these things. But I think right now, I think we're more concerned about people who take repeated hits over a sustained career than at this point we are, say, one season of high school sports. But we do know that the developing brain, such as in high school, may be more vulnerable. So I'm just going to keep saying that it's a little too early to answer that question. There's a lot of people concerned about it. But right now, we certainly aren't able to draw that connection.
So bottom line, what's the takeaway?
I think the most important thing is that if we properly recognize and manage concussion, and if we do what we can do to help prevent concussion, proper education about avoiding dangerous play, about, you know, educating coaches and athletes what the symptoms are, I think in most cases we're going to get through this without problems. And certainly if there are questions, call our clinic and we'll...
Yeah, very briefly, in the very little bit of time we have left, what does your clinic offer?
So at the Upstate Concussion Center, we offer education and treatment, and we are also involved in some research about concussions. So certainly we treat people. We tend to see complicated cases where there have been multiple concussions. We often have parents coming in with that question, should I let my child go back to play this sport? And there aren't clear answers always, but we try to educate people and help them make an informed decision. And when needed, we have a multidisciplinary team that offers comprehensive treatment for those complicated cases.
Wonderful. Well, thanks so much for coming in. As always, it's a pleasure to hear you, talk to you, and learn all that you have to offer. My guest has been Dr. Brian Rieger. He's the director of the Upstate Concussion Center. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.